My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Hi, Judy.
Happy April 21st, Mike.
Yeah, how was 420 for you? I know it's your favorite day of the year.
Well, I was at a viewing, so it wasn't that fun. A good friend of mine died this week, Bob Morales. He was an editor at Vibe for a while. He was a comic book writer, music writer, and he died on my birthday last week. So it's been a grim week.
I'm terribly sorry about Bob. Maybe I have a present for you for 420.
I hope it's a big doobie.
Well, I know you don't smoke pot, Judy, and we're going to talk about 420 in a second because apparently I've been the target of an internet flame war. Do they still call it that? From that thorn in our paw, Steve Hager, that deluded old tie-dye fuck.
I think Phoenix, his Native American name, even though he's from Chicago.
But I think
you'd
like this present. This is it's not for you. It's for your kitties.
Oh,
this is some serious. Strong catnip.
Oh, that's what a woman with three cats needs.
From our friends at Catnip Farms.
Erica Wild Girl?
It sure is. So here, it's some of the kind bud. And let me tell you, I gave some of that to my cat, Jeepster. And after he snorted a little bit, he burned his draft card. Okay, so go easy on this.
Mitzi's going to be burning her bra, whatnot. It's going to be crazy.
So yesterday, 420, for those not in the know, though I can't imagine anybody so far removed, 420 is International Stoner Day. And 420, the story behind 420 goes to, once upon a time, there were some deadheads called the Waldos. That was sort of their name for themselves, just sort of like some stoner clowns, who met every day at 4:20 in the afternoon because that's when school was over, and it became their thing, and they said, let's meet at the statue of Louis Pasteur by their high school at 4:20. And I guess Steve Bloom, another old friend of ours, emphasis on old, Grandpa Simpson Bloom, who had discovered this old Grateful Dead poster that said 4:20 and put it into High Times, and it caught on to the culture, whereas Steve Hager sort of co-opted this and decided he was going to be the man behind 4:20 and tried to brand it. And
only to a really idiotic pothead would this matter at all.
It would. Well, the crazy thing, so yesterday I start getting these crazy emails saying Edison hates hippies. Which is not true, because I am the king of the hippies, as you know. And 4:20 yesterday, I was listening to Astro Weeks and smoking a joint. I've been known to throw a frisbee. I've been known to throw a hippie, too, for that matter. But anyway, we got into this flame war. Hager says I'm deluded and I hate hippies. My favorite line of his big rant, he goes, I've only wanted to be known as a journalist until I got my license as an alchemist. And he is now selling $350 sets of candles on Amazon that help you with your telepathic powers. His, of course, which are amazing.
Maybe he should have used those telepathic powers to find out his wife was cheating on him in his bed.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh, snap. You know, Hager's just the worst sort of person. And the whole thing is he goes on this whole rant about his opening the chakras with his seven magic candles and his, mind-opening potency tea. And well, he's one of the worst sorts of fucking hypocrites. And then he says,
allegedly.
You know, and then 420, which is, you know, I'm cool with it. I'm down with it. You know how I am. I'm like kind of anti-slacker, but I'm pro-pod as far as it goes. And this stoner holiday, which he has co-opted to be the International Day of Peace, based on like a bunch of kids getting fucked up after school. So now I believe there's world peace, thanks to Stephen Hager.
Thank you, Steve Hager. We should get to our guest, who is not for world peace.
We will. I just, the best part of the whole story, though, to end it, though, is Hager ends, it's people like Edison who make parodies of hippies, and they need to stop.
I think Steve Hager is
the... Yeah. And the next line was, buy my 7 candles for $350. So there is life after High Times, Judy.
Thank God.
I am so excited about our guest today. Let's move quickly from hippies to punk rock and beyond.
Our guest today is all-around writer, author, Michael Azarad. He's written features for Rolling Stone, The New Yorker, New York Times, written 3 books.
A certified classic, Our Band Could Be Your Life, a very wonderful and important book.
Yeah, and he has a new venture, The Talk House. Hey, Michael, thanks for coming.
Hi, Judy, thanks for having me.
Anytime.
It's good to see you here because that band was my life. there was a book about a time that I was, getting the van.
Well, that was a very formative bunch of bands, who seem to have influenced even the bands, today. It lives on.
Absolutely. So, well, specifically that book, was about the Butthole Surfers and the Minutemen and who else? Black Flag.
Yeah.
Who I see are playing again, right? They're coming back around. Some version of Black Flag.
Yeah, a permutation of Black Flag, yeah.
Are there 2 versions of Black Flag?
Yeah, there are actually 2, yeah. I think the word is permutations. It's got a couple of members of the band in each version. Like Greg Ginn has one.
And Keith Morris has the other?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how it's working, yeah. I can't remember exactly. But one's called Flag and one's called Black. I can't remember something like that.
Well, I think there was a time when there were probably 17 different versions of the Drifters playing in America at any given time.
Right, right. So this is just the Drifterization of Black Flag.
And the current version of Blood, Sweat, and Tears has no original members and claims it to be the best lineup of all time.
It's their opinion. You can't dispute that.
Well, why is Black Flag so popular again? Why do we? I mean, and how's Mudhoney doing? I see they put on a record, and Omar comes around and does it. I think, is there life after 1980s rock and roll? I mean, these bands were very formative. It was a very good creative time, sort of past the hardcore thing that was happening in the early 80s when people got to stretch out a little bit more and open up their influences, and all of a sudden became okay to like Black Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think this Black Flag resurgence. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with the regular pendulum swings of pop music. A few years ago, you had some pretty genteel stuff being very, very popular, the so-called NPR rock of Grizzly Bear and St. Vincent and stuff like that. And now the pendulum is swinging the other way. You have Japan Droids and the completely awesome, killer, great sounds of Metz and the Men and, all kinds of bands who are rocking pretty hard. And it just seems like a reaction to what came before, as usual in pop music. And Black Flag is, kind of a classic example of that
the
kind of music.
The Grampies of them, yeah.
Were you a Black Flag fan, Judy?
I loved Black Flag.
You were such a hardcore punk rocker back in the day, yeah?
Yeah, oh yeah, I saw Black Flag a million times. Never before Henry, but because I'm so young. But yeah, I saw Black Flag a million times.
I like those bands. I like Black Flag. I like the Circle Jerks very much and the Bad Brains. Very much, and of course, I had worked with Reagan Youth, and we played with those guys like many times.
They were on the Black Sabbath tip early.
Very early on the Black Sabbath tip. Well, Black Flag, that was part of the whole thing. That was Greg's thing, right? Part of it, anyway, was a love of Black Sabbath.
Yes, also, but though a big part of it also was his love of the Grateful Dead, who he'd seen scores of times before Black Flag even started.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because hippie that I am, I've seen the Grateful Dead many more times than I've seen Black Flag. But, there was a time, and I think in the 80s, when we started the band Sharky's Machine, because we liked the Grateful Dead, we liked Hank Williams, we loved Frank Sinatra, Elvis Presley, and Little Richard, a lot of roots rock, but we were also very under the sway of Motorhead and the Bad Brains and the Stooges and the MC5, of course, to be that kind of aggressive. And to the people we were playing for, there was a hard line being drawn. We opened up for Henry Rollins one time, and that was when they stopped booking us in front of bands that played a little bit more rock and roll as opposed to hardcore, because it was very, very polarized. Later, with Nirvana, they may not have been the start of it, but it was okay to play a ballad in front of a punk rock audience. You could put it over. And that was a very important shift that I think happened throughout, Our Band Could Be Your Life. That's sort of, to me, that's part of it is things that are opening up, because if you look at the bands in that book, they don't really have that much artistically in common.
No, and that was one of the beautiful things about the early days of that indie punk scene is that it was more about the freedom to make whatever music you wanted and the infrastructure that people built so that music could be recorded and distributed and heard and seen. And after a while, it just kind of got codified, and people's idea of punk rock became, whatever Green Day sounds like.
Well, what is punk rock? Can someone explain it to me? I've been a self-described punk rocker since I hit air, but what the fuck does it even mean?
I think it's an approach. It's not a sound. It's an approach. It's like it's it's just playing what you feel like and not caring and just doing it and working really hard to make it heard and seeing what happens.
Also, it can be quite good, though. Lots of great musicians play punk rock, which is what a lot of great musicians won't acknowledge either.
Yeah, but the goodness or badness, I think, is irrelevant. It's just it's an approach. It's like you can be a punk rock string quartet,
mm-hmm.
and some play Bach and all that stuff. But it's how you approach things. It's making an end run around the powers that be and the usual ways of doing things, so you can achieve what you want to achieve.
Would you describe your new project Talkhouse as being in that vein?
No, actually, I don't think the Talkhouse is very punk rock. I got to admit, the Talkhouse is the smartest, most notable musicians, we can find writing about currently released albums. So, it's people like Laurie Anderson or Duff McKagan, Winston Marshall from Mumford & Sons just wrote something on Friday, and people from Parquet Courts and Ben Greenberg from The Men wrote something, all kinds of people all over. Vijay Iyer, the acclaimed jazz pianist, wrote something. Dave Douglas, the amazing jazz trumpeter, wrote something. People from all over the spectrum.
How do you get them to sit down and write? Like, I got a lot of musicians to be in my book, and I ended up just being on the phone with them or going back and forth over email and doing a lot of transcribing.
Uh-huh. A lot of it is pre-selection. I kind of know who can write.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Buzz Osborne from the Melvins is writing about the new Iggy album, Iggy and the Stooges album. And I just know that he's a smart guy. I've known him for 20 years. I know he can write. I knew Laurie Anderson could write, obviously.
Well,
They're just people who are just, you just get a sense of it, and it works out. At first, I was really worried. I thought getting musicians to turn in things on time would be like, the proverbial herding of cats.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
But they're actually, there's the new paradigm. Musicians are used to being a little bit more on it now because of Frank, to turn it back to Our Band Could Be Your Life, to this necessity of having to be on it and doing things yourself. And not being, what Mike Watt once called the princeling, someone who's just doted on and lazy and overindulged. Like, you have to work.
Can you imagine? I mean, Our Band Could Be Your Life. Can you imagine all those hours that we spent in the van in those years if we had smartphones? I mean, we did those tours without the internet, without any social media, without even a fucking cell phone to tell you how to get to the gig. I mean, how many times did we pull up in some town and we're around the corner from the venue, and just going around in circles because we couldn't find it, and a simple phone call, would have ended it. Or to be in the van and everybody posting, and taking pictures of where you are and American Oddities and sharing life on the road. Definitely a different dynamic.
Yeah, but still, but that diligence that made that scene happen.
You had to want it fucking bad back then.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, the barrier to entry was very high. Recording studios were expensive and difficult to use. It wasn't like we all could do things on our laptops. I mean, it was far from it. I mean, it was tape and it was expensive. And, I mean, things got better quickly. And what's nice is people like Black Flag had, the Sex Pistols and some bands behind them. The last great 70s punk rock bands to build on. The bands of the 90s had all the great bands of the 80s to build on. And, of course, it became easier. But at the time, if you wanted someone to get to your gig, I mean, how many nights, did I come home covered in, glue because I was out pasting up crap in the East Village?
Right. And I think there was kind of a virtue made of how difficult it was. And now that it's easy, it doesn't count anymore. But the whole idea of all that work and the blood, sweat, and tears of those indie rock years in the late 70s and 80s was so that it could be easy to make your own kind of music. And that succeeded. People Deerhoof just made their own album cover using a cell phone camera. And that is the triumph of DIY right there. That is so beautiful. And things like that happen all the time. And, we're in some sort of state of grace right now, I think, with indie music.
Why not? I mean, you can make great art with your iPhone. There's no question about it. The problem, I think, is that everyone has the same tools and thinks they can make great art because they can post it, because they can take a picture. They think they're a photographer. And, the problem is Andy Chernoff once said to me, is punk rock won. Mm-hmm. And now we're really suffering because DIY, it really did sort out the wheat from the shaft a little bit. If you weren't dedicated, you had to get out of the game. It was just too hard to do it.
Right.
Now it's very easy. And the good – I mean, not that people aren't making great work. People are recording great stuff, I'm sure, on their iPhones and on their laptops and making great, very quick digital work. But there's so much of it, it's getting harder and harder to flesh it out.
And the same thing has happened with music writing. now everyone has a blog and a Twitter account and all this stuff, and you know, there's a whole bunch of really mediocre stuff to slog through. And that was another actually inspiration for the Talk House, is that, well, if we get really inherently interesting people, Duff McKagan writing about Kiss, you know, or EMA writing about this German singer Annika, or Dave Douglas writing about Wayne Shorter, or Elliot Sharp writing about Richard Thompson, blah, blah, blah. That's just going to be inherently interesting and worthwhile. And so that's the part of the idea of the Talk House, is to kind of get around that creeping mediocrity of DIY.
I really enjoyed Duff Spit on Kiss. There was no epiphany there, except for the, you know, and of course he was sitting next to Gene Simmons on an airplane, so there's access which we don't have.
Yeah.
But the tone of the piece was, I'm a fan, I like this. Mm. He wasn't, you know, deconstructing it. It was just very enthusiastic. Mm. It was written by someone who could easily be cynical, but there was an optimism to it, and I like that, because I think that's missing from a lot of, you know, journalism, is just, hey, I like it, I'm a fan.
Right.
You know, yeah. We're not trying to over-intellectualize this bullshit. I mean, it's Kiss.
Right. But it's inherently interesting that Duff
it's
McKagan...
It's Kiss in 2013.
Yeah. But Duff McKagan is saying that, and that's just kind of cool and great. And the other thing is, I mean, you get a sense of the record from his piece, but you also get a sense of Duff. And Duff turns out to be quite an articulate and likable fellow. I think it's, I don't know, I really enjoyed that piece a lot. I thought it was really sweet.
He contributes to the Seattle Weekly, where I...
Oh, he's your colleague.
Yeah, he's my colleague who won't answer my emails, but he's still my colleague.
Well, now, can you get Duff to write to Date Girl? You know, no. Judy does her advice column.
I think he doesn't really need my help, but...
But in his line of work, I bet he knows plenty of people who do.
So speaking of stuff like... being fans, what are we going to hear, Michael? This is our midway break. You picked the song or the band. Tell us about them.
Oh, yeah. I picked Parquet Courts, who I actually saw last night at the Bowery Ballroom on a great bill with White Lung and Ice Age and some German band called Burial. Not the electronic artist Burial, but this other German.
You got that, Judy, not to be confused with the other Burial.
Yeah.
I love the other Burial, so I'm a little... Yeah. I feel good that I didn't miss them.
Yeah, all right. Parquet Courts are really... They're just a great Brooklyn band.
All right,
really,
well, like, it's Joe the Engineer. Please give Parquet Court a spin. It's the Mike and Judy Show. Here is Michael Azarite on the Heritage Radio Network.
Seems these days I'm captain in this borrowed time. you know, HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization. If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
I love the voice of Jack midway through.
Well, it is very important. We do need members. You know, Judy, if I had five members, my pants would fit like a glove.
Oh, God. I think you've told me that joke before, Jackie.
Every opportunity. It's so hard to segue into that. Yesterday, not only was it 420, it was Record Store Day. Record Store Day.
I know. What'd you buy, Michael?
I bought nothing. I went on a hike in the woods for several hours.
Where did you go in the woods? Central Park?
Back to the garden. See, Michael's after a man after my own heart. Back to the garden.
Yeah, yeah. So back into the woods. Yeah.
Escape from all this, the mishigas of the rock and roll and the industrial corporate music complex.
That's right. Sometimes you just need to clear your head.
That's right. That's right. Clear your head.
With a nice
jazz record, for instance, Judy.
I have too many records as it is.
I'm sure you do. Your floors must be creaking.
Well, we were talking before a little bit about how music journalism has been so diluted and how difficult it is, but also the market being saturated. You have too many records. Used to be putting out a record was a big fucking deal. I mean, when I put out my first record, it was like people stood around and oohed and aahed at the Black Plastic. We were very special in our little group because we had a record. Hmm. You know, it's not like that anymore, of course. And music journalism, how are you going to differentiate yourself? I know you can have musicians writing, which is great, but there is so much out there. How are we going to bring attention to your website? What's the business model for this? Because it's just so overwhelming right now, the internet.
Well, it's the Talkhouse, which is the website that I edit that we're talking about here, has taken off like a shot. And I think that people are really curious to hear musicians talking about current albums. It's just it's kind of unheard of. And I think it's just inherently interesting to people. And how you get heard above the din is the notoriety of the musicians themselves. I can't even explain why it's working, but it is. We're incredibly popular. And publicists and musicians come to me every day asking, can we write for the Talkhouse? So something is going right, and I wish I could actually explain to you why, but I think it's just inherently interesting.
Do you ever, the stuff I've read has been overwhelmingly positive. Do you ever have anybody slam anything?
We do, but the idea of these pieces isn't actually to be, either thumbs up or thumbs down. Uh-huh. I explicitly tell our writers not to think of them as reviews and themselves not as critics. Write about it from a musician's perspective. And so there's an inherent, I think, respect for any other musician who has taken the time to write and record music. They're putting themselves, into this thing in a very profound way. Even if you don't like the music, a fellow musician will respect that. So there's a certain baseline respect. They pick the records,
okay.
Yeah. So it's obviously something that they're interested in writing about. But, I'm very strict about, no conflict of interest. If you know this band, you can't write about them. If you have the same manager or label or whatever, you cannot write about them. So it's just stuff that they're interested in. Sometimes it's indifferent or negative. Dapwell from used to be in Das Racist wrote quite a blistering takedown of Wiz Khalifa's record recently. And we've had plenty of indifferent pieces.
I love the is their name EMA? That was so cute because it was like back and forth between the two artists. I didn't read the whole site obviously, but do you hope for a lot more of that kind of back and forth?
Yes, that's another thing about the Talkhouse is that the only people who are allowed to comment on the pieces are the artists being written about.
That's excellent.
So that avoids trolling. But it also, again, makes something that's unique and interesting.
Wait, so you've actually reinvented the whole concept of the comment section. As another friend of ours, music journalist Maura Johnson, always says, rule number one, don't read the comments. Mm-hmm.
But here you want to. They're really good.
Well, what you've done is you've removed the democracy of it. You're an elitist, Azarad. That's what it is. You're an elitist.
Well, it's more like, trying to keep the comments interesting and relevant and pertinent. Now you have this ringside seat to this exchange between two people who are talking about each other's music. you never get that unless you're sitting in the tour van with the musicians.
Let me tell you something. Democracy is what ruined the internet. There are too many fucking people involved. You know, was it Mark Twain that said, anything with that many people involved can't possibly be worthwhile? And it's true, it has diluted it. No, I think we do need to focus. And I think this is good. And there need to be, the barrier to entry needs to be rebuilt so that I know when I go here that it's curated or aggregated or edited responsibly. Right. And it's not a bunch of fake Yelpers or bogus Amazon reviews. It's you, and it's coming from the source. That's very, very valuable.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks. We're trying to be, selective and have the anything that's put up on the site be of substance.
Now, how do you work when people write negative stuff? Ennui is nice. I think there's a lot of that going around. Uh-huh. Are we going to be seeing some feuds? Is this going to be the Wild West?
What's interesting? I think, musicians are very wary of, getting caught up in famous, flame wars. But again, because these pieces have this certain baseline respect, I think even in a different review could be responded to by the musician in a very polite and interesting way. And they could have a perfectly good exchange where no one got very heated or angry, but it was fascinating to hear. Like Peter Holzapfel, who used to be who is still in DBs and played with REM and all this stuff, he's coming up with a review about Willie Nelson that I hope Willie Nelson responds. It would be really, really interesting to hear them.
Who are some of your dream guests?
My dream guests. But I'm going to jinx it if I...
No.
Jim Morrison. Okay.
I hear he's back. Morrison.
I heard he's hot, sexy, and dead.
that would be Jim
Maybe
Hendrix.
We can conjure him. We're going to have a psychic show soon.
So, Michael,
just sort of channel.
Wait. Is that Joe the engineer?
That's me. I have a question.
Young punk rocker, ask away.
So my question for you, Michael, is are there any bands now that could be, maybe not your life, but anybody's life? It seems that this... I found out about a lot of the bands that are in the books much later, but it seems that the culture surrounding music doesn't exist. Everyone goes to the same places to find their music, and it's very disposable. It's all about the hot new thing, and nothing seems to last for very long. Everyone has their 15 gigabytes of fame or whatever it is these days. So is there any way for bands to actually still have this resonance with the audience?
No.
No. Crusher, Michael Azarin. Yeah,
I completely agree.
Keep your day job at the Mike and Judy Show, Joe.
I think people do still, very much connect with bands. There's certain people, people still connect with certain songs. And it's very meaningful. There's a band called No Age out in Los Angeles that's very DIY and runs a club. And they're very inspiring, and they have kind of a tribe around them. Rave culture is very, could be your life.
And jam band culture too. As much as find a certain trappings of the hippie culture repugnant, spearheaded by that fraud Stephen Hager, especially. There are a lot of things that I really, really admired about that is because it was a community. They were together. It was DIY. It was definitely a tribe. It was definitely, it was a big tent policy, come as you are. The music is questionable. Sometimes it can be very, very good. A band like Galactic has certainly made good music. Dusky Martin Wood has certainly made some very good music. A lot of the other bands, not so much. Mm. But to me, it resonated as, tribal punk rock.
Yeah, and metal is also another community.
Oh, my God,
very
metal
tight.
Is the biggest music. And, a lot of people, obviously, in New York don't realize it because it doesn't come here the way it does to the Midwest. But metalheads are very loyal people.
Yeah.
And identify very strongly with their community.
Yeah, but I guess the question was maybe more about the indie scene. Yeah, things are, it is very fly-by-night and disposable. Although there are some, perennial kind of flagship bands. I mentioned St. Vincent, Grizzly Bear, Dirty Projectors. There's some big bands that just keep, maintain a following, and people really do invest themselves quite emotionally in that music. And, that lives on. And to a certain extent, they conduct themselves in ways that you could maybe emulate in your own life, following that Our Band Could Be Your Life kind of ethos. I don't know. It's not impossible. It's music. Music is amazing. There's nothing like it. And even if it's fly by night now, I think it will find its level again.
It's what separates us from the animals.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you, Michael? thetalkhouse.com.
Yeah, that's right. That's you won't find me there. I edit the site. You will find lots of fine musicians writing about music there.
I'm very much looking forward to Buzz's talk about the new Stooges thing because, unfortunately, I can't comment because I'm not part of that elite crowd, but it sucks. I'm just going to say it right now. It sucks. What I've heard, anyway, based on what I've heard of the couple cuts that have been leaked onto the internet, the James Williamson stuff, it's very contrived. It's not the spirit of the Stooges, much like the weirdness is. Like, when did the Stooges have clever choruses? You know, it just seems wrong in a big fucking way. So there, I said it. So take that to Buzz. Mike Edison says the new Stooges record sucks. The James Williamson version is not all that in a bag of chips. There's a lot of Emperor's New Clothes going on there. Although the Ron Ashton version live was a fucking epiphany. It was possibly the finest rock concert I've ever attended in my life.
Yes, I saw them at South by Southwest that first year, and that was explosively awesome. Yeah. But we'll just see what Buzz Osborne says.
I cannot wait. I'm going to be looking for it on thetalkhouse.com.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming, Michael.
All right, for Mike and Judy, Joe the engineer, happy 420, everybody. Fats Waller. See you next week.
Hey, cats. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I just left the VBS Studios. Here we are in Harlem.
Everybody, thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
If you're a viper, I'm the king of everything. I gotta be high before I swing. Let the bells ring, ding, dong, ding. If you're a viper, say you know you're high when your throat gets dry.